Pseudopod, episode 177, January 15th, 2010. This week's story, Turning the Apples, by Tina Connolly. Hello, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Alistair, your host, and this week's story comes to us from Tina Connolly. Tina's work has appeared at Escape Pod, Podcastle, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, and the anthology Unplugged, the year's best online fiction. Our narrator this week is Cayenne Chris Conroy of TechDiff.com, so pay attention, because there's money to be made, and there are apples in the cellar. And most importantly, I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Turning the Apples, by Tina Connolly.
Get your cells,
says Zoe to the streaming tourists.
New world, need a cell, get him here.
Not interested.
Bought one on the ship.
Zoe opens his jacket, reveals a wall of buttons, corn-rowed phones.
Come in handy if you get in trouble, mister.
Some local shoves him, fastpecker his age in shiny shoes.
Why don't you leave with the other tourists, foreigner?
Zoe can't afford trouble, so he ducks his head, smiling. When the local goes by, he nabs his cash flap. Swore to Mac that he wouldn't. Maybe. That was before 6 months of taunts. Before it was driven home that honest hawking is a recipe for no food, no cash. No ticket off. Hand on his sleeve and he whirls. Cell that ain't a cell sticking out a blade, ready to take the thug if he has to. But it ain't no regular thug. It's double job Johnny. And that's bad, because the only time Johnny comes to see him nowadays is for Hawk.
What's up?
Says Zoe. All cool. His hand retracts to his pocket. A likely Mark walks by, but he can't go. Not with Johnny draped and breathing hot on his collar.
I've got apples in the stockyard, says Johnny.
Fresh. Apples is code for coma bodies. That 1% of off-world tourists that get the infection. They disappear if Hawk is fast and the crematory is slow. Stockyard is the freight shipyard. That's easy. But he's blocked out what fresh is.
Got a good gig now, Zoe mumbles.
Johnny flicks a cash flap out and it's Zoe's. Johnny always was better at lifting than Zoe. Even back when they were scrawny, jerky kids. Back before Johnny turned tricks and Zoe was just learning to turn minds.
$18 off of tourists, Johnny says. You know, Hawk will give you 2,000 for an hour at the stockyard.
Cells, says Zoe to a fat tourist. Get your cells.
Johnny slams his hand into Zoe's shoulder, and there's no knife there but the force of what Johnny holds on Zoe.
This ain't a negotiation, boyo, says Johnny. They're fresh, and Hawk's in a lather. He needs what you do. You're the only survivor in the city right now. Stockyard, 3:30.
Then Johnny is gone. And Zoe is sick to his knees because he's just remembered that fresh means awake and screaming.
The fuck you been? Says Hawk.
It's 3:31 after Zoe spent the last hour looking for them. In the moonlight, the shipyard is a mountainous dark. The whir of generators vibrates in his ears. It might cover the sound of fresh apples. He tries not to listen.
Listen, boyo. Turn them for us fast, just like the old days. Johnny says you need the cash.
The problem is Zoe's jonesing now. The touch of his mind into the coma bodies is something he's tried like hell to forget. But they press into his gray folds like a million firsts with a million new girls, touching his mind with vibrations hot and sweet and fleeting. He's been clean nearly half a year. So long. Too long. The coma bodies always come in waves. The wave of tourist season, the wave of Hawk finding new suppliers. There are five propped sitting against a hangar wall, leaning on each other. They are screaming. The worst kind. Hawk's got dirty rags in their mouths, but their cheeks are taut around it. At least someone's closed their eyes, probably Johnny.
What do you want them for?
Never mind that.
Zoe shoves hands in pockets. Hawk goes cagey when it's a new venture. Never mind that he knows the drill. Never mind that he knows he's got Zoe over a barrel.
You know fuck all, Hawk. Are they for waste? The minefield? What? I can't code them right if I don't know what you want them to do.
Fine, Hawk says. I need swimmers. I need them to seek out pearls in the sulfur pits where the heat blisters your arms and the gases belly out your lungs. Rose-colored pearls each coiled like the belly button of a giant.
Johnny rolls his eyes at Hawk's purple words and the boys grin. For a minute, it ain't tight pants Johnny and Weary Zoe. For a moment, they're two kids playing pickpocket for Hawk. And life is sometimes okay. At least they're alive, you know? That's what Zoe always thinks when he first touches the coma bodies. At least I'm alive. He closes his eyes, savoring the last moment before he gives in. Johnny and Hawk walk away, fade away, And Zoe touches the first one on the head and reaches. Zoe doesn't think of much while he's turning. He can't. But in that first moment, he thinks of palm trees. Zoe barely remembers his home planet. He and his mom came here when he was 4. Despite what she claimed, it wasn't a vacation to the fabled water parks half a day south of here, and hot springs and waterfalls that kept tourists coming back. His mom was fleeing her old life. That's something he only pieced together a decade later. He and Johnny flopped on Hawk's couch, high on green smack. He doesn't know which planet it was or what the whole of it was like. All he remembers is a swatch of green grass with a palm tree. Occasionally other things float back, words or faces or sayings. The image of the palm tree is what he calls home, though for all he knows it wasn't even on his planet. Maybe it was something he saw on the ship over. Maybe it was a cardboard palm tree in a carpet of plastic grass, and maybe he sat there and waited for his mom to come out of the ship's bar. He tries all these images on till the palm trees disintegrate in swimming and pearls and pure white nothing, and he still doesn't know. Last coma body turned, and now the 5 are all turned, ready to dive for pearls for Hawk. Zoe's full of buzzing aftermath, his mind panting like he's jizzed all over them. Hawk drops a wad of cash that thunks his shoulder. Sure, he grabs it, but it's nothing compared to the fierce relief that floods his brain. He limps down the long road from the shipyard, blood dripping from a bitten tongue. He thinks he'll avoid the street for a few days, lie low, score some green smack, anything to take the edge off of wanting to do more apples. Maybe 2,000 enough to get him on his ship himself, get him off the planet. If it weren't for Hawk, his past, Zoe could stay clean. It's cold out here in the early morning. The green smack is quick to come by. The pea stink outside his squats hardly bugs, not while he's all strung on coma bodies. If he'd had another 50 in the alley, he'd do them all. But instead he rolls up the green smack under his tongue and flops on the mattress. The green smack makes him sad. It always does. It ain't most punks' drug of choice, but it's Zoe's. This time on the green smack, he remembers how he and his mom got infected. The first he knew something was wrong was his mother asleep standing up, pouring whiskey over a mug and onto her hand. She woke up once, and then she fell into a coma. He remembers toddling around the hotel room before he fell asleep too. His dreams were beautiful. Dreams of something orgasmic. That was a new sensation at 4. Gorgeousness, lush and happy. And when he woke, he was sweaty and starving, and his mother was flopped on the hotel bed. Zoe can't forgive himself for toddling out to find food, for inadvertently reporting her, because white blurs of grown-ups and cots took her away. He traded her for a ham sandwich. That's how he feels. And here and now, on the green smack, he cries snot and spits more blood. That's when the poli comes to his crappy squats and hauls Zoe himself away, still crying like a 4-year-old. They don't even give him a ham sandwich. At the brick station, Max stretches and sighs. Give us the details, Zoe. You might as well. You already know what's up. Why do you want me? Zoe hunches around his knees. There's bits of glass on his pant leg from the shipyard tarmac. He flicks it onto Mac's desk, which Mac ignores. We know it's Hawk. We know the supplier. We know it's 5 or 6 bodies. We don't know where they're going, and Jesus, Zoe, we'd like to track them down. Don't you think your mother would have liked that? Keep talking about her, and I won't tell you anything. Truth is, he hates to disappoint Mac. Mac picked him up the first time he was caught. 8 years old, and he'd already turned 53 bodies for Hawk. 53, because he remembers each one. Hawk cleaned him up and got him a foster home. A decent one where they didn't hit you. But when Hawk came to him with more apples, Zoe went straight back. I know you've been clean half a year, Zoe, says Mac. I was rooting for you. What's Hawk got on you that you can't resist? Just the money, Zoe lies. I need to eat, don't I? Join up with us, Mac says. Help us hunt down the guys like Hawk. Rescue other tourist kids who survived and got caught up in this. Don't you wish you'd never known what it was like to touch their minds? Of course he does, but so what? If I worked for you, they wouldn't tell me what they were up to, duh, he says. Mac rises and cracks his back, looks out the window at a grungy building a meter away. It's painted red brick like so much of this port city. Like a fleeting bright color will slick over decay. There's a rumor Max says. That a kid like you, except better than you, a fighter, has managed to undo the damage.
Zoe's heart pounds so hard he thinks he can't hear Mac.
All?
All. Wakes them up. Mac's voice does that measured thing.
She says it hurts a bit, but the rush comes later. Like a stalling before the pleasure.
He twirls a pen.
Too bad she's in East Enland. They ain't letting her pass their borders for cash nor love. It'd have to be the guy we know here trying it.
His eyes catch Zoe's. To heal them.
There'd be cash for each one you turn, from the general missing person's stockpile.
Awake. Alive. Okay. Zoe can't breathe. Can't think. Because the hold that Hawk's got on him is his mom. Coma cold and alone and digging waste out in the desert.
He hadn't known that Hawk had his mother for a long time. Hawk had been using another kid back in those days. A girl, stranded here. Her parents had been cremated quick. Hawk hadn't gotten them. The girl lasted a few years. She tried to wean herself from coma bodies with street drugs and lost. That's when Johnny found Zoe. His hair and skin a dead alien giveaway.
Getting infected makes your brain rewritable. Surviving makes you able to rewrite. Not everyone gets it. Most natives are immune, and even many tourists are. 0.5% is a low enough number that tourists flock in by the thousands, through the major port city and down south to the waters. The adults that get it are in a coma within 24 hours. It's only the kids who sometimes survive.
By the time Zoe saw his mother, he'd turned 19 mines for Hawk. He remembers the first one particularly, like you remember a first girl or first trick. But he remembers all the others, too.
Don't know why you would, says Johnny. I don't remember all the men.
But Zoe does, and he clings to each one, proof that somehow he is not like Johnny, not like Hawk, not like himself. This is all temporary, and therefore changeable, rewritable.
Zoe doesn't know if he recognized his mother the moment he saw her. He wants to say yes, but the truth is there was this moment when he saw this smelly, skin-rashed woman, and a moment when he saw his mother, and the two seemed to be laid on top of each other, vibrating.
5 whole days on the street corner, and Zoe's only made $12 in 2 fistfights before Johnny comes back.
Apples at the cellar, says Johnny.
In the cellar, says Zoe.
Fancy words, Hawk, mocks Johnny.
The cellar is a basement, so if a cellar's your code, you should say in, not at.
He's too eager, and strange words, strange memories spill forth as he tries to hide his jittery hands.
Cells! Get your cells, he says, turning, aping his former self.
Johnny slugs his ribs, bruising him via the phones in his jacket.
We don't talk about codes,
he says, and his breath is sweet with cherry mint. Midnight. He's gone, whistling through the crowd, and Zoe pats Mac's wire in his sleeve, pats his ribs. When neither is broken, he says,
get your cells,
until Johnny has vanished.
Cherry mint's nice. It floods your mind with sweet and your breath with sugar. But it ain't touching the hot rush of coma bodies. It's the drug of choice for people like Johnny, who spend their nights getting it up.
That's a fucked up job, Zoe thinks. Maybe his life sucks sometimes, but he ain't Johnny. Zoe's had sex exactly twice, and he doesn't seem to be cut out for it. If he could just meet that girl from East Enland, he'd ask her what she thinks. Because for him, this thing that everyone wants ain't so great. It's a millionth of what it is to be hot inside the coma bodies. It's pale and localized and hardly worth the anxiety. Maybe that girl would know what he means. Maybe the two of them can figure it out together. Could trick out their own substitution for the drug they can't resist. For now, it's just one more thing that makes him feel alien and alone on this planet. As much as the gray tint of his skin, the silky texture of his hair. He wants a jolt no one else can do or understand. And he doesn't want a joy that fills everyone else.
It touches on his own work, sure. There ain't a big trade in coma pussy, but there's some, like there is for anything.
Zoe saw one alone once, a young girl with hair like a cotton ball and lipstick smearing off. She was sat down at the corner by some local who teared off in a hurry.
She was probably tracked by the pimp. He probably had a detector set to send someone out for her. Too witless to run, and her brains were coded by Zoe, or someone like Zoe. Zoe crept along the alley. She was crooning, not rocking, not coiled. Limp against the building, singing a song about a sparrow. He didn't recognize her face, but checking, slipped his mind in, and then was sure he didn't know her, hadn't done her. He was doing her now, though, her brain hot against his, slipping through the vibrating folds. She rocked her head back, still singing, staring at the moons. Zoe recoiled then. There was an instant of pause, and then he rewrote her. Rewrote her to walk down to the shipyard and stand under a shuttle. Now thinking back, he thinks, could I have saved her? Woke her up. No matter how much life sucks sometimes, Zoe likes it better than the reverse. He'd granted that to the woman, too. Only back then, everyone knew coma bodies were dead in all but their meat. At midnight, Zoe pats his wire and drops into the cellar. It really is underground. Hawk packs in and out every time he uses it, slipping in and out by dawn. The wire is for Hawk's sake. Hawk knows he's been with Mac a lot, and Zoe has never been good at hiding jitters. That's why Johnny is a better pickpocket than he is, and a better trick. Hawk pulls the wire out of Zoe's jacket with a snap, laughs at Zoe's expression, and tosses it on the ground. I'd be mad at you, but you're too lame, he says, and grinds it flat. Come on, there's apples. Code them for waste. Zoe reaches in, and when he touches the first, there's all that mad rush of vibrating brain, all that buzzing that usually makes it so easy to code the apple to do what Hawk wants. But now, following Mac's instructions, he's going to take out the buzzing. It takes fumbling. It isn't natural. It's like swimming upstream. Until it clicks. And then every place he feels the buzz that lets him hook in, he reverses it until the apple drains. The infection he's cutting out. It seems to fill him. It's a horrid wrong, and he twitches with it, trying to dispel the notion. At last the hook is less and less, and Zoe is next to nothing to hook into. Then nothing, and he's locked outside. The apple's eyelids flutter, and Zoe quick leans down and whispers, "Play dead." The man seems to obey, and Zoe quick tries the same reversal on the second, the third, slogging through as his brain tells him it's stuffed with the coma body's infection. It does hurt. He does want release, but he keeps going. Holding back seemed a deserved punishment. Zoe almost feels holy with it, which is another word from the past. But before he can start the fourth, number two spasms.
I remember! I remember! I know!
He screams, and Hawk and Johnny come running. Johnny's belt's undone, Zoe realizes later. But right now, it's all the stupid fat number two, and number three's too twitchy to play dead next to that. Number two runs on shaky legs, yelling for the poli and his wife, and Hawk shoots him. Number one stays stiff, but number three bolts and is shot.
What the hell did you do to them?
I don't know. I don't know,
whimpers Zoe like he's four again and piss scared. Hawk's eyeing Zoe, but what distracts him is Johnny says,
I know, he did it. He did it somehow. And how the hell would he do that, huh?
Says Hawk, and he smacks Johnny upside the head.
Just cause you wish you could do his job instead of your little pervy one? It must be a mutation. You!
And he points into Zoe's face.
Figure out how to adapt this or you're dead!
He stalks off, and Johnny with a crumpled face hurries after. Number one's eyes go to him. Zoe doesn't know if it's like looking at someone he's killed or birthed, but either way, he can't stand the intimate touch of the man's eyes. Back door's past the stairs, he says, and then he hurries out before he can be any more responsible for anyone. At the red brick station, Zoe says, two were shot, but you saved one. It worked. And Mac believes him and hands him cash, just like that. Mac doesn't ask the awkward questions like what the man's eyes were like, or how Zoe feels now, stuffed taut and bursting with a mind full of infection. Zoe squirrels the cash away with the rest of Hawk's money.
Ready to try it again? I've got a lead on four prostitutes we haven't rounded up yet.
Anytime, says Zoe, and the thought is fine. If this keeps working, maybe he doesn't have to flee the planet like he longs to. Maybe he could play both sides and come out smelling clean. The thought's a relief, here with his mind still thick with the swarming of coma body's infection. There must be some way to let that go. But it hasn't drained yet. But he'll figure that out. He's sure. Here with bright hope flickering.
No time like the present, says Mac, and he shoves his chair back. Unless you know somewhere else we should go. Hope floods a crowded brain. Hawk's taking one to the desert, says Zoe. After Zoe found his mom, he started sneaking back to be with her. Not right after a coma body's rush, but 2-3 days later, when the high had worn off. Then he watched his mother trundle over buried nuclear waste, and he didn't know what to feel. He hated the idea, but he tried it anyway. If he can rewrite coma bodies, why not rewrite his mom? And so he laid his brain alongside hers, though the vibrations were awesome and disgusting. He overlaid her with ideas of mother and son and hugs and palm trees. And when he backed out, she bent down and gave his exhausted body a hug, then trundled back to the waste, scanning with her monitors and smiling on one side of her face. Most miserable thing ever. Sent him running straight for Johnny's couch in the green smack. But today, he doesn't have to run. Zoe says desert, and Mac knows right where to go. Waste cleanup is one of the uses for coma bodies that the poli don't do anything about. Officially, it doesn't happen. A few minutes out there isn't going to hurt anyone. And Mac and Zoe thread through the few lone figures, past the red-painted bunkhouse, until Zoe says,
"That one."
"Your mother?" says Mac. And Zoe, stunned, nods. Mac knows then. Zoe had thought he might, but that Mac hasn't done anything with this knowledge opens up a black wedge between them. Zoe tumbles out of the car, backs away from Mac and towards his mom.
"Don't do it," says Mac. "It's been 13 years, mate. She's gone."
"How do you know?" says Zoe.
"Rumor. That girl like you in East Endland, she couldn't wake him up right beyond 3 years. Their minds were too dead."
"I don't believe you."
Maybe this girl is a fantasy, he thinks. A made-up ideal for Mac to prod Zoe one way or another.
"I've got the file with her notes. Let me grab it," says Mac,
and Zoe watches his mother pace the site. She's in that same brown shift, and her arms and hands are cracked and red and white. Her bare legs are brown and green. It's like any other day out here, except this day has a different ending. But there's a whistle behind him. Johnny's, from the bunkhouse. Zoe idles that way on guard.
"What are you doing here?"
"You're in trouble, boyo," says Johnny. "I told Hawk he should punish you, but he says you're worth even more to him than if you just come back or something."
He studies Zoe and sighs, all the air whooshing from his thin frame.
"Is it true you can wake him up now?"
Zoe nods, and Johnny kind of pats his shoulder. Doesn't slug him or arm burn him. Then Hawk's behind Johnny and says, "Get your poli back here, and I'll kneecap him." He's got a rusting iron bar that he draws up.
"We'll take you back, don't worry."
There are 2 coma bodies wandering around the bunkhouse, both in those brown shifts. One is so diseased-looking, Zoe assumes he's too far gone to wander around with a monitor, even for an apple. Hawk practice swings.
"Is he coming?"
"You're small time, aren't you?" Zoe says. He hadn't realized it growing up in it, but the constantly shifting locations, the raising young boys like Johnny. Hawk swings at him, but he jumps back.
"You don't own me," says Zoe. "Not like Johnny. You never did."
Hawk swings again, slashing wildly at Zoe, but Mac's there behind him. He tasers Hawk and throws the handcuffs on him. Johnny backs away.
I ain't done nothing. Nothing.
Mac breathes.
"Honest, Zoe, I wouldn't try waking your mother."
She's there behind them, trying to hug Johnny.
"You knew she was here.
What could I do about it?"
But that floods Zoe's mind with the image of a young coma body whore with hair like a dandelion. He grabs his mother's blotchy wrist, holds it tight, tighter, and leans in. Then he's gone, in this strange new method of pulling things out and into himself, pulling in the rotted bits, pulling in the mechanical bits, taking them into his own self. It hurts, yes, but when he's done, there's that holiness in it too. And he sags onto the ground, painful in every bone, on edge. His mother doesn't move.
"I'm sorry, Zoe," says Mac.
But then her eyes open. Her eyes are lopsided, and she looks at him, her rat's nest of hair falling over, and like a lightning burst, she croaks,
"Boy!"
Then she collapses, falling limb by limb to the whitened ground. Her eyes whiten, and her pitted hands search aimlessly for her monitor. Slower they search, and slower. Her nose presses into dirt. Zoe can't look at Mac.
knows the pity on Mac's face.
I'm sure it'll get better,
Mac says. And this is the first time Mac's lied directly to him. Mac knows it too, and he flinches, burly shoulders twitching.
Loser, rasps Hawk. His shoulder twitches from the tase. Should have woke her up when you were four. Course then you wouldn't have got to fuck them all, which I let you do. Wouldn't have got to spend your life making cash for screwing them over.
Zoe hurls himself at Hawk, knocking the manacled man backwards. And before Mac can pull him off, Zoe punches out at Hawk. Not with his fists, but his infected mind. It sears out taut and bursting. It's all been waiting to be released, and all four infections he scored pour into Hawk and knock him cold. Cold but screaming. Hawk's fresh all right, unawake and crying on the ground. They are all stunned, all but Zoe's silent, still mother. Zoe's shocked and twitching, and he runs, lopsided, stumbling with the spent energy, full of strange highs and horrible thoughts. He takes Hawk's car through the desert and back to the city. Mac doesn't come after him, nor Johnny, not in the next 12 hours, which is what it takes to come down from the high and the shock and count his cash from coma bodies. He can get to palm trees, he thinks, if he knew where they was, and if he should go. 'Cause there's always East Endland, too. And maybe it seems to him that a tourist is a guy who never interacts with his own life, never slips into the deep. Zoe runs hard to the port, where he breathes hard and fast. He watches the heat waves of the shuttles, ships in flight.
A friend of mine once got a job by role-playing himself. Seriously, he worked out what qualities of himself he'd like to bring to the fore, worked up a rudimentary character sheet, and treated the interview like live-action role-playing. He got hired, too. I've talked before about how we're different people when we're around different people, and I'm sure I will again because it's something that fascinates me, and frankly, there's only so many things I like to talk about. We're different people, different aspects of people, depending on who we're with. Family, friends, lovers, colleagues. Every one of us is a choir, a collection of voices with different soloists, all depending on time, place, and company. Every day, every conversation, every moment, the board is cleared and the rules change. Or, to put it another way, variety really is the spice of life, and, as we all know, whoever controls the spice controls the universe. The thing is, though, it's also really difficult. I've lost count of the amount of times I've been the wrong version of me in the wrong company. I've said the wrong thing. I've acted stupidly. But the point is, it's the choice I make, the choice everyone makes. We choose who we want to be, for better or for worse. But when you take that choice away, what you get is the subjugation of identity, the destruction of self, and that makes this an incredibly haunting story for me. All we have are ourselves, all we have is what's inside our own heads, and even that is a constantly shifting, malleable thing, a handful of quicksilver to go really portentous for a second. I decide who I am, and when you take that away from me, when you decide who I am, what have I got left? Because that's the point where I stop being an individual and start being a thing. The point where I'm no longer a human, but an apple. The point where, as this story suggests, the only two choices you're left, or at the very least, the two easiest choices you're left, are to be subjugated or to subjugate. And that's a choice I never, ever want to have to make. As opposed to whether or not I should ask you for money, which is a really easy choice to make. We rely on you to pay our authors, so if you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. Every cent is used to cover costs and pay our authors, and every single cent is incredibly gratefully received. Pseudopod is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, and Pseudopod can't see the wind blow, but it can feel the breeze.